WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those are Love Lights. How can I tell my mom and dad? Quintessential Chicago soul. Though I have to admit it, when that came out, first time I heard it, Huggy Boy in L.A. was playing that. Yeah, how can I tell my mom and dad that I'm in bed? That record was so awful, I loved it instantly. It was one of those just terrific records. And I had to get a copy, of course. It was on the Lock label, which at that point I'd never heard of. And not much more after that, actually, although you're about to meet Bob Pruder if you don't know him already, and he'll fill you in. But I won't say that was the beginning of my love affair with Chicago soul, because that actually started years earlier. But when I was thinking about just some of those gems that you never hear anymore, and it was a hit, got to number 15 on the R&B charts once it was on Uni, but I've talked too much already. There was a book that came out in 1970 that I thought was life-changing, Charlie Gillette's The Sound of the City. And it wasn't for another 21 years that a book struck me the same way. And then I got a copy of Chicago Soul, Bob Pruder's book. I consider it a Bible. Every time I've moved, which is too many times to count, I've made sure that it was in the car with me, just in case, you know, something was lost in the move, this book wouldn't be something that went. So it is my honor to welcome Bob Pruder. Thank you for joining us, Bob.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really pleased that you asked me to come on your show.
Well, the book is just great. I've read it cover to cover a few times, and you filled in so many missing stories for me that I otherwise wouldn't know. So I just cherish that, and I guess I hold my breath to some extent when I ask you this question, but were you a major Chicago soul lover before you wrote this?
Yes, I think I was. I actually started listening to soul music in 1963 and listening to the local Chicago R&B stations. And so it was like a couple decades before I ever wrote the book. And the reason I wrote the book is I had this experience in Chicago listening to local radio. And maybe listeners of radio today do not realize that back in the 60s and at least into the 70s, music scenes in the major cities were quite different. The radio stations had different playlists than other stations like in New Orleans or New York or Los Angeles. So in Chicago, I got a much larger diet of Chicago soul than I would if I lived in Los Angeles. Nowadays, radio programming is such that it's homogenized across the country. Everyone hears the same songs, no matter what city they're in.
Absolutely. And although the mega hits were the mega hits across the board, it was the lower half of those charts that made each market so unique. In some cases, it was a rolling hit, of course, where it would be a hit in Chicago, and then later it would be a hit somewhere else, and it would stay on the charts but never get to the top of the charts. But then there were all those records that were just quintessentially local hits. And you mentioned Chicago soul stations, and, you know, especially 63, because that's about the time WBON came to be, and of course WGES before them. But who were the personalities that really floated your boat?
With WBON, the one personality that comes through is Herb Kent.
He was the
major star of WBON, and he had the early evening hours at the station, which is the prime hours for broadcasting to younger people. And so he was sort of like a DJ for the teenagers. You know, earlier in the day, they would have some other DJs. And actually, on WVON, during the day, the big group of listeners were housewives, African-American housewives, you know.
Sure.
And But beginning at 3 o'clock after school lets out, then the programming slightly changed. More records directed to teenagers, like they would play Major Lance and The Impressions and Jerry Butler, Gene Chandler, Betty Everett. And but during the mornings, early afternoons, after midnight, you could hear older music, I guess, blues and records that sounded like rhythm and blues of the 50s, because it reached an older audience.
Sure.
But even though I was post-teenager, by the time I was heavily into WVON, I liked the teenage version of the station. That's what I was weaned on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were quintessential, formulaic, but wonderful little soul records and all the early Curtis Mayfield stuff and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, Herb Kent, the cool gent, when he did the Wahoo Man, I loved that bit. But VON had so many great personalities, whether it was Rodney Jones or Butterball or Lucky Cordell or, you know, so many, Purvis Spann, names just immediately come to mind. And that was great radio. And like you say, you weren't a kid anymore. So what were you doing at the time?
I was going to college. And I was going to college. I went to college in the fall of 62. In 63, I discovered WVON, and I was drafted in the Army in 67. So from 63 to 67, I was, listening to R&B pretty regularly. And after I got out of the Army, I moved back to Chicago and just resumed interest in the radio stations and the music.
At the time, was it even in your mind that you might one day be the major historian? And when I say that, I don't think there's a more definitive work than Chicago Soul. The major historian of this music, did it occur to you that you might be the gatekeeper of that?
Not when I was first listening to it, but I'll tell you what, I laid a kind of a foundation, because when I was listening to the station didn't always have hit sheets, especially in 63 and early 64. But I kept a notebook and wrote down the songs and wrote notations on them, so I could have a memory of what was being played on the station. That helped tremendously years later when I was doing a book. And so I kept interest in this. And then the reason I wrote the book is as I got involved in reading the rock press and the, popular music was growing in interest, Rolling Stone magazine, the daily newspapers were writing about rock groups and rhythm and blues groups and so on. One of the things I noticed is that, how do I say, in the crossover market, in the top 40 radio and top 40 world, and in the pages of Rolling Stone, they only had cognizance of two soul music centers. Well, one was Motown, of course, and the other was Stax, mm-hmm. And I said, wait a minute, there's these other scenes, Nobly Chicago, Nobly New York, which had, was the center of the recording industry, and they had a lot of great recording, soul style recording artists. And after I got out of the Army in 69, I continued, buying more and more records, and I became what you call a record collector.
Yeah.
But I was I was never a paper and plastic collector. That is, some people collect records because whatever the name is or whatever the sound is, you know, they buy it for its rarity, you know, and I think half the time they don't even know how the records sound because it adds to their collection.
Right, right.
But I was interested in the music, and at a certain point, I wanted to know everything about the music. And so, in effect, I became a paper and plastic collector because I wanted every single record that, you know, Major Lance did.
Yeah.
Every single record on the Lock label. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And that served me well because I got a full understanding of the recording careers of all these various soul artists, and I could see sometimes a really good record by these artists never becomes a hit. And when I wrote my Chicago Soul book, I made sure I mentioned, you know, those records because it was part of their whole body of work.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking to Bob Pruder, and if you haven't read Chicago Soul, you must. And I'm so pleased to find out that Bob loves the music and was taken with it the same way I am, because so many times when somebody writes something, they're more of a historian, but it's just thrilling to me that he shares my passion. So, you got any questions or comments? We'll take them. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Chicago Soul Royalty there. Curtis Mayfield wrote it. Carl Davis produced it. Riley Hampton arranged it. It came out on 1965 on OK. It's a woulda, coulda, shoulda. Marlena Mars is the artist. And I would not have known about that record if it weren't for Bob Pruder. Chicago Soul by Robert Pruder is the book. And also Do Up the Chicago Scene. Equally fascinating. But what I remember about this, when I, of course, had to look up, well, who is Marlena Mars, was a quote that is in the book attributed to Davis, that he questioned his ability to record women, saying, you know, I'm not as successful with the guys. I don't know why. And that just stunned me. And I guess in chart numbers may be true, but Marlena Mars, that was a great little soul record. Now, do you remember that, Bob, from when it came out in 65?
I don't think so. I don't think it got played on WVON, and I only discovered it when I was picking up all the records related to Chicago Soul. And you're right, it's a marvelous record. It should have and could have been a hit if it, I think, had the if the jocks grabbed onto it like they should have.
Yeah, I can't understand that one. And as I say, it was Curtis wrote it and Carl produced it, Riley arranged it, so it had all this royalty behind it. But was Carl Davis still alive when you were researching the book?
Oh, yes, yes. I interviewed him several times, and there are some quotes in there from Carl Davis. And so
okay.
I did get him. He died not a few, maybe 2013 or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that. I'll be darned. Okay.
And anyway, can I recapitulate something that we discussed earlier?
Sure.
I want to emphasize that the reason I wrote Chicago Soul was that I didn't feel that the American public knew enough about it, because it was all the concentration on Motown and Stax in Memphis, and I felt I needed to correct the record, you know, of what soul music was in America. It wasn't just those two centers. Chicago had a huge role in it.
Absolutely.
And I really loved your taste in music. You know, because you're playing good songs that never were crossovers, and some weren't even his, but perfectly represents Chicago sound.
Yeah, it's just terrific. And, so we're talking with Bob Pruder. Chicago Soul is the book. And, if it were in another venue, I'd just like to play records back and forth all nights. But your calls are welcome as well, 888-876-5593. I'm Raleigh James, and it's WGN Radio. To be loved. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the Daylighters. What a Way to Be Loved, 1962 on Tip Top. And we're talking with Bob Pruder, who is the author of Chicago Soul. And that's not all. In fact, for years, R&B editor at Goldmine and much, much more. But it was Chicago Soul that really filled in so many blanks for me, and I just love it. Now, with the Daylighters, you practically need a flow chart for that group, Bob.
Well, that's true of a lot of groups. You know, they do a lot of changes in personnel, for example, the Temptations, but there are very few groups that really kept their same personnel, and one of them was the Chicago Dells. They were, you know, only one change of personnel in the 40-year history of the group. And as you know, the Dells were both big in the 50s as a doo-wop group and big in the 60s as a soul group, and one of Chicago's biggest contributions in soul music. But the Daylighters, the photo of the group on the cover of Chicago Soul is the Daylighters.
Right.
And this is kind of embarrassing because I know Tony Gideon. He was a member of the group, and he's very proud of his photo being on the cover of Chicago Soul. But the reason I picked the Daylighters is that the Daylighters were not well known outside of Chicago, and if there was only one photo on the cover, it couldn't be someone like the Dells. Everybody would think it was a Dells book, right. Or it couldn't be the Impressions. People would think it was the Impressions book or something. So I had to pick a group that people didn't really know very well, and it would be sort of like a generic picture.
And it is. It's a great picture. I mean, the pose and everything is just perfect for the book.
That's why they picked it. You know, they go through the photos I sent for the book, and they decide what's going to be on the cover.
Yeah.
And but I told them ahead of time. I suggested ahead of time that this would be a good one, and I suggested a couple others. You know, and they picked that one, and I think it's a great.
Oh yeah,
great selection.
No, it is a great selection, and you're right. So many of these groups' members moved around, things changed, but I think the Daylighters, and they start like in Birmingham, and then they had a whole thing with Gerald Sims and all that. Next thing I knew, it was Donald Jenkins doing Elephant Walk, which is just one of the most marvelous little records, and on. So it's a group that, to me, has quite the pedigree, and like you mentioned, no one outside of Chicago has ever heard of them. I know the morning guy at GES, GG, managed them for a while, but they never seem to break.
Right, but there was about six or seven records I remember hearing on WVON, and I treasured all of them. And I did quite a few interviews with several. I interviewed with Gerald Sims, who was a guitarist for the group for a while, and. Tony Gideon still lives in Chicago, and he's a Facebook friend, and every once in a while he posts the cover of Chicago Soul, because that's part of his history.
That's great.
And,
now, as a fan, obviously you came in with quite a lot of knowledge. And even so, when you did the research, I'm sure there were some things that really surprised you. So what were some of the gems you uncovered, either records or just facts that you had no idea before you did this research?
Well, there was one peculiar fact that I couldn't quite figure out. It was at one time Gene Chandler started out on VJ.
Sure.
And then he went to Constellation.
Yep.
And all the time, for much of that time, he was produced by Carl Davis. Then Carl Davis went to Brunswick Records, and Gene Chandler did not exactly go to Brunswick with Carl Davis. He went to Chess, and he went to Brunswick, and every other record was Chess, and then Brunswick. And it was very peculiar because you're either on one company or the other, unless you were with another company earlier and they
released your masters,
putting out old material.
So what was the deal?
Carl Davis was producing one month he would produce records for Gene Chandler records for Chess, and another month it would be Gene Chandler records for Brunswick. So I asked him, this doesn't make any sense. That isn't how record companies work. And he looked at me. And he said, turn off the record recorder. Turn off the tape recorder.
Yeah.
And then he told me a long story of mobster influence, mm-hmm. you know, on his company, Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that the story was that the mob was going to put out a hit on one of their record business colleagues in Philadelphia, and Carl Davis asked them not to put on the hit. And then they said, well, you're the manager of Gene Chandler. I want you to have Gene Chandler signed up with Brunswick. He says, but he's with Chess. I can't do that. He says, make it work. And so Carl Davis went to Chess Records and said, I have this problem. and they said, okay, we'll do every other one. And that was most, I didn't put it in the book because he wanted it off the record.
Yeah.
And I kind of indicated what was involved in a footnote in the Chicago Soul.
Now
later on he was much forthcoming, but that was many years after. This wasn't that many years after when I interviewed him, and he didn't want to get in trouble.
All right, more people had to die first. But that brings up something else that I thought was fascinating, and that's the story of, and it's in your book, Roulette Records in Chicago. And there's some murky nature about who was working there, isn't there?
Right. Roulette recorded a couple of Chicago artists in the mid-60s with the Chess producer... help me out now. Who's the producer?
Was it, Ralph Bass was going to run the operation.
Ralph Bass.
Yeah.
And this was Henry Ford and the Gifts was the main group, and they had some really nice records, you know. The thing was that Ralph Bass was a producer at Chess. And these records on Roulette were coming out with Ralph Bass' name listed as producer. And I said, well, how does this work? I interviewed Ralph Bass, and he said, oh, I never recorded Henry Ford and the Gifts when I was at Chess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he denied it, you know. And I said, okay, whatever you say.
Right.
But
yeah.
he was while he was working at Chess Studios, he was working with this group, Henry Ford and the Gifts, and some another artist, and using Chess Studio time, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And using his time, which was supposed to be devoted to Chess, for his own outside project.
Well, right, Right. And I know the gift set on Roulette, it's Uncle Willie. And of course, speaking of Chicago, that dance is impossible to do, the Uncle Willie. I'm sure there have been injuries from people trying that. But nonetheless, of course, Ralph Bass and Johnny Pate and Raynard Miner had a role in that as well. Now, were they more forthcoming?
Well, I didn't ask them about that. You know, whatever they...
Yeah.
You know, like Johnny Pate was an independent contractor, you know.
Yeah.
He could go with anybody. And Raynard Miner, I don't know what his exact contractual relationship with Chess was.
Right.
So he might be an independent contractor as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Ralph Bass is supposed to be using his producing time at Chess to produce Chess records.
Yeah,
but that kind of thing happened all the time, and it was just I just found it kind of funny how people were doing it so often. You know.
Oh, of course. And we're still talking at a time when this is largely a singles market and not tremendously big business. So in many ways, it was the Wild West. We're talking with Bob Pruder, Chicago Soul. I will take your calls. And I see Johnny from Austin wants to get in on the action. There's room for you, too. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. But I'm your cue. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Liz Land's One Man's Poison 1967 on Wonderful. You had to play something from George Lehner's label. And what's wonderful about being on WGN is not only do I get to talk to people like Bob Pruder, but I have an amazing group of people listening, including, I mention, and he calls, Raynard Miner. Welcome to WGN Radio. Thank you.
You know, I've caught you in the last few weeks, and you've got my interest. Yeah, how you doing? I like hearing your music. I like your style.
Well,
you sound good on the radio.
Well, this is an
honor.
What
you're doing now. Bob Pruder, he was the guy that interviewed me back in the 60s when I was really hot at Chess Records.
Yeah, so I want to know, what was the deal with Roulette?
The real deal was Ralph Bass was being moved out by Roquel Billy Davis.
Uh-huh.
And Ralph, he wanted me to come with him and write some, you know, music for a group that me and Rose Miller found, and that was him reporting the gifts.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that I would go, he was on 26th in Michigan, was his office. And what we did was, what I did was wrote some songs like Treat Her Nice, Uncle Willie, and produced it too. And Johnny Pate was the arranger, my arranger, and Ralph was the producer. But I was producing with him because, coming from Chess Records, I was... Well, that's what I was doing.
Right. Well, this is just such a wonderful story. As I was saying, when I saw the Uncle Willie dance, I mean, you can get injured trying that. Who came Who came up with it? I mean, it's hard. Who came up with
hard,
that? Yeah.
But Henry and them, they made it up. You know, I didn't. But
can I say hello to Raynard Miner?
Absolutely. You guys talk all you want.
How you doing?
Okay, I just want to remind you, I first interviewed you on a group called The Gems.
That's right.
And you gave me a very good interview, and you connected me with, I forget what that girl's name was.
Minnie Riperton.
Minnie Riperton.
Well, I discovered Minnie Riperton.
No, you connected me with Jessica Collins.
Yeah, well, she was in the group. Yeah, right, that's correct. She was in the group.
Yeah.
And I discovered Minnie Riperton at High Park High School in Chicago with Rose Miller. And we had a girl that had to drop out of the gyms. And so we needed another girl to take her, take the other girl's place. And what happened, Minnie auditioned the day that Kennedy was assassinated. That was a real trip, too. We were all in high school. And so what happened was that she was interviewed, and the Jims weren't as successful as the Henry Ford. They tried, but they couldn't get it off the ground. But Henry, they were pretty good. They got past everything.
Wow. Now, is this the same Gifts that later had Lovin' You in 66 on Ballad?
No. I don't know if it is. I had nothing to do with them after went to Bone Town.
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
I think that was a St. Louis group. They weren't the same Gifts.
Okay.
Reynard is correct.
Okay. I always wondered.
And on top of that, I was recording Fontella Bass, and I wrote Rescue Me and Higher and Higher, and
yeah,
We're Gonna Make It by Little Milton, Who's Cheating, Who Milton. And then I went to Motown and stayed over there for a while and did some things on the Four Tops, Diana Ross, and everybody else. Minnie went on her way to, I forgot the name of the group, but they were pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
But I was so surprised to hear you on the radio, Bob, because I remember I was so outdone when you wanted to take an interview of me. And I said, well, you know, at that time I was, real young, and I wasn't thinking about nobody thinking about writing a book about me in Chicago, because it was just something else. It was amazing. And now that, and everybody that has read your book have always said, well, they got your name in the book, Renard. Yeah. I say, yeah, well, okay. But ask me something. I'm trying to relate things. I'm so surprised that I caught him on the radio.
Oh, this is great. And by the way, Who's Cheating Who is one of my all-time favorite records by Lil Bill. Great little song.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, one of my favorites was Rescue Me.
Oh, of course.
Because it was a great big hit. And I'll never forget the feeling on that, because it was two takes on that song, Fontella Bass. And, of course, I was a keyboard player also. And the first time we did it, the first take we did that, when it went dun 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 dun, well, I hit the wrong note. Dun 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 dun, bom, uh-oh. And we had such a great feeling. And I said, no, start it all over again. And Billy Davis, he counted it off again, and we had the same pocket, even a better pocket. And that song, you knew, after we did this song, it was like maybe 20 seconds of silence. You could not even, the room was so filled with electric, you couldn't imagine it. You know, if you could hear a pin drop, you couldn't hear a drop.
Yeah. Is a great, great record. I also love that duet she did with Bobby McClure, Don't Mess Up a Good Thing.
Yeah. I don't know if I did that or not. There's so many things I did with Fontella and Bobby Hutton.
Well, you guys have ended the hour now. If you will hold on, Renard, I want to get your phone number, because I want to have you on some Monday night, if you'll do it.
No problem.
Okay, thanks. And, Bob, I'm going to impose on you. Do you mind staying after the news? I know Johnny in Austin wants to get some questions in. I have a few other people who do as well. If you don't mind, I'd sure appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, and I promise not to keep you too long. I won't hog you all night. I won't do that. And then after that, of course, we'll play trivia, as we do on Monday nights. And it's the last votes on the world's worst hit records as well, you know. All they have to be is hits. I don't care about genre. I don't care about year. I've been compiling the list, and it's mostly been email votes. I've gotten probably 1,000 email votes and probably 30 phone calls. So maybe we can reverse that tonight. All that and more coming up right here on WGN Radio.